I'm Matthew Petty, and this is an encore presentation of Intersection. It's the start of the legislative session this week in Tallahassee. The big issues, the budget, sequestration, Medicaid expansion, I'll talk with 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Plus, former Neighbourhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman faces trial this spring in the death of Trayvon Martin. At the centre of it all is Stand Your Ground legislation. I'll talk with State Senator Chris Smith and State Representative Dennis Baxley about whether Stand Your Ground will come up in the legislative session. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined by 90.7 political commentator Lou Fry. Lou Fry is a former Republican congressman. Nice to see you, Lou.
Good to see you and our good close friend Dick Batchelor. Dick has got a very important meeting he's at and wanted me to give his apologies, but he's going to call in later.
Very good. Okay, so let's talk about sequestration. There was a lot of ramp up to it, I suppose, last week, and it's now upon us.
Chicken Little, the sky hasn't fallen. Sequestration is not new. When I first got to Congress in the early 70s, a guy named Frank Bow from Ohio was a Republican member of the Appropriations Committee. He would put a bill in to cut 5% off of every appropriations bill. And in those days, we actually had appropriations bills. We didn't live with the CRs. So the problem with sequestration is not the amount of money. If I was in Congress, I would have voted for it because we needed to do some cuts. And that was part of the deal that was done. And I would have voted for it. But I would have wanted it so that while the amount was there, I would want it so that you could make intelligent choices and there wouldn't be a meat cleaver. Example, say you're working with a small company that makes very minor miniature batteries for the new fighter. But the sequestration would come along and we could knock that company right out of its tracks. And so because you don't have the battery, you don't have the fighter, and because you don't have the fighter, the U.S. defenses really are not what they should be. So that's in a plain, simple thing is you don't have the ability to use a scalpel on it. You use a cleaver, and the cleaver's common sense was illegal during this debate.
What are the Florida lawmakers, what are you hearing from Florida lawmakers about sequestration for a start and these other things you're mentioning, the continuing resolution down the track in March?
Well, there's different things that they've talked about that is going to get hurt in Florida. There were claims that we'd lose 680 of civilian jobs. There, you know, a lot of stuff was thrown out. Never was really clear what was going to happen. And I think from the reaction on it now is, while nobody's happy about it, and the defense budget may take a minor hit in Florida, that, you know, maybe it'll work. maybe despite everything, this is at least going to work and take $1 trillion off our debt.
Lou Fry, do you think there's going to be any surprises coming out of this legislative session? I mean, they've got a pretty packed agenda. What are you looking for?
Over in 60 days is what I'm looking for, so we don't have to go an extended session. But yeah, there are going to be some surprises. Let me say this, though. I think the Republican leadership is much stronger than it's been. Not that there weren't good people there. You had some wonderful people who were strong. These people, though, up there now are a little more bipartisan than I think has existed in the past. And I think they're going to do a good job. I think you'll see more people working together. I don't think the Democrats will necessarily get anything more out of it, but I think it'll be a less raucous session. But maybe that's me believing in Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny.
Now let's talk about Governor Rick Scott. What about this turnabout on Medicaid expansion? Because, you know, last time we were talking about his about-face on education, putting money back into education that he'd taken out the first couple of years. I mean, do you think, is this just a bold-faced political gambit? He's looking to re-election, or is it a little more nuanced than that?
Well, it obviously fits in with his political campaign that his advisors have put out and so forth. Can he suddenly legitimately change his mind? Yeah, there's a lot of money that we're supposed to get back from the state. There's from the federal government. They're supposed to finance 100% of it, you know, the first year and 90% the second year. It may be a good thing. I'm not really sure because we're still trying to figure out what Obamacare is going to be and what it's going to do. But the fact that he wants to take another look at it, I think if you like Scott, you can say, gee, isn't that someone who stands up there and for what he's worth and admits he's wrong and goes at it? And if you were on the other side of it, you're saying to yourself, boy, I'd like to run for governor. Is he really liable on this one? And what's going to happen? The committee I think in the House just recently passed out reluctantly the first step in Obamacare to move it along. So mm-hmm. it looks like that Obamacare will creep through, and then we'll see what happens with it.
And what about actually getting a Medicaid expansion done? I mean, will that happen with the legislature we have in 2013?
Oh, that's certainly the $64 question, what's going to happen with the legislature and how bad it's going to be and what they're going to do. I don't think anybody knows that. They just know that there was a great deal of concern in Florida against Obamacare. A great many people were for not passing it, not repealing it. And now people are sitting down probably and saying, okay, what's gone on? What's the difference in just 12 months or so forth? This wasn't any good. Now it's supposed to be good. You know, it's a lot of people are worried about it.
Turning now to Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer saying he won't run for governor. He announced this during his annual State of the City address that he's committed to a building campaign that's defined as 10 years as mayor. What do you make of that announcement?
I was disappointed. I thought Buddy did a good job as mayor. He's had some bumps along the line, so he's been through some tough times, but he's come out of it a lot stronger than when he in it. I think we've never had a governor from here, from the central part. I think he would have been a really good candidate. And I think that our former governor, who's now a Democrat, Charlie Crist, running for it, has got some real problems that he could have exploited. I think he looked at it, and I don't know what he's looking at. I don't think he's going to be through in politics when he gets done being the mayor. And maybe he's looking at the Senate seat coming up down the line in a few years. But you got to stay alive in politics. You've got to stay alive. If you're there and you go out, nobody will know you, and you got to work to do it. And I just thought we lost, for the state standpoint, just a good person who's we could use in these troubled times.
And do you think it has anything to do with whether former Governor Charlie Crist will run again?
John Morgan is one of the most powerful political figures in the state with what? And guess who Charlie works for? John Morgan. Guess who Buddy doesn't work for? John Morgan. If you have the biggest fundraiser in your home area not on board with you in that, it makes the race, a difficult race, even a little tougher.
Do you think he leaves any room for
a
gubernatorial run down the line at some point?
Oh, sure. Sure. He's not that old. Yeah, he can certainly do that.
I've been speaking with 90.7 political commentator Lou Fry. Lou Fry is a former Republican congressman and an attorney at Lowndes, Drostick, Doster, Cantor and Reed. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm Matthew Petty. What do you think will be the biggest issues in this year's legislative session? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter, or you can email us at intersection@wmfe.org. I'm joined on the line now by 90.7 political commentator Dick Batchelor. Dick Batchelor is a former Democratic State House representative. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Let's talk about sequestration. It's been an axe, if you will, hovering over the heads of legislators, and now the axe has finally fallen. But, of course, the effects are yet to be felt in some ways. What's your take on what the impact of sequestration will be in Florida?
Well, if I could adjust the metaphor a bit, I think the axe is just beginning to fall and is not landed yet. I think we're going to probably find out when it does land there are actually consequences. Even though we're only talking about 1.5% to 2% of the overall budget, these cuts will have ramifications. In the state of Florida, there's several hundred million dollars estimated to be lost alone just in the defense industry. There's going to be mental health funding cuts, pre-kindergarten cuts that are going to be in effect. So I think with the legislature being in session, they'll have an opportunity to look at the real fiscal impact of this budget cut. So I'm not sure they won't go back and revisit that. I think revisit, what I mean is they might go back and allow the Congress to, at least ask the Congress to give discretion to the agencies rather than asking for an across-the-board cut. Let them have some discretion in the types of programs they cut. So I think the axe is falling, but it hasn't hit yet.
Turning to Medicaid expansion, Rick Scott ran his campaign on a sort of anti-Obamacare platform a couple of years back, but Governor Scott now supports the Medicaid expansion in Florida. Do you see this as having a tough road through the legislative session this year?
I think the governor is going to be a contestant on Dancing with the Stars. He has had such footwork on so many issues. Remember, they cut the budget, he and the Republicans, out of K-12 education by $2 billion. when he first came into office, and now he wants to put another $1 billion back in education and claiming that's a net increase when, in fact, it's a net loss, but now he wants to be the education governor. He also did run with the Tea Party support and was very much opposed to Obamacare. In fact, he worked with the Republican legislators to put an anti-Obama health care proposed constitutional amendment on the ballot, which failed. And then all of a sudden, he's now wants to accept the Medicaid dollars. And so he really has pirouetted on that issue to the dismay of a lot of the Tea Partiers. And I don't know where they're going to go from here, but the question is whether or not now he could work with the House and Senate leadership, the Republicans, and get any of the Medicaid monies in. Right now, you've got the House taking out one position, the Senate's taking out the other. But the bottom line is, when you're looking at the possibility of attracting $20 billion in federal money in exchange for $1.5 billion in match money, I think that the states can be hard-pressed not to accept the Medicaid dollar expansion.
Dick Batchelor, what about the governor's numbers? I mean, you mentioned that he's now above 40% approval rating, and your friend Lou Fry said he thinks he's really turned things around. How do you see this playing out?
Well, here's the dilemma he has. He's got to, it's like running the gauntlet, so to speak. He is governor. Florida, by its constitutional outline, has a pretty weak governor. The legislative branch carries most of the authority. He can present a budget. He can give a state-of-the-state message and outline what he wants to do. But if he doesn't have the support of the Republican-led House and Senate, it won't get done. Medicaid is one of those big issues. As I indicated earlier, the House has staked out one position in opposition to it. The Senate has not taken a position yet. But can he get Medicaid reform through? So what he has to do, he's going to be forced to fight with his own party. If he throws enough of these issues out there, like he wants a $2,500 pay raise for the teachers, well, it looks like the consensus of the House and Senate, led by Republicans again, might be leaning towards giving a pay raise to state employees who have not had a pay raise in 7 years, saying all state employees deserve the same attention as teachers. That would be a fight. So the problem is, the point I'm making, if he has to fight his own Republican brothers and sisters in the House and Senate, he could cause himself some real problems, and then you got to make the decision, do I try to run over my brothers and sisters and reach the public and appeal to the public and the vote, and registered voters? And that's a very hard thing for him to do because, again, the governor does not have that much statutory authority under the Constitution.
And Dick Batchelor, what do you make of Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer saying he won't run for governor?
One of the other rumors that keeps floating about here is whether or not President Barack Obama will offer some kind of appointment to him, either in a cabinet or sub-cabinet position. And if that's offered, then do you kind of rethink what you're going to do? But I think that would be an interesting option for him. If the president offers you something, I think you'd be hard-pressed not to accept the job, depending on what level it was at. But you know, I think the people are benefited by the fact that he's agreed to stay here and serve as mayor. He's been a very good mayor. Some of us are disappointed that he decided not to run for governor because we think he'd make a great candidate for governor.
I've been speaking with 90.7 political commentator Dick Batchelor. Dick Batchelor is a former Democratic State House representative and head of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Nice speaking with you.
Thank you.
Coming up, a conversation about Florida's Stand Your Ground legislation. It's been a year since George Zimmerman shot and killed unarmed teenager Trayvon Martin. That shooting thrust Stand Your Ground legislation to the centre of attention. Several bills involving the Florida law have been introduced in this year's legislative session. I'm joined in the studio by Florida State Representative Dennis Baxley. Mr. Baxley is a Republican from Ocala who is one of the lawmakers who crafted the so-called Stand Your Ground legislation in 2005. He was also on the Lieutenant Governor's Citizen Safety Task Force, which reviewed that legislation last year. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
First of all, Representative Baxley, one of the recommendations that came out of the task force you were part of last year was better education to ensure uniform and fair application of the statute. Does that mean, in your view, that it's basically a good law?
I would think that kind of summarizes my viewpoint. After hearing much testimony and many challenges, there was still a lot of support as we conferred in the task force for the idea that law-abiding citizens should be empowered to stop violent acts of attack and when that occurs, they should have the confidence that they're not going to be treated as a criminal for doing what they should do, which is stop a violent act. There's no reason for anyone of our citizens and guests of Florida to endure a beating, a rape, a murder, simply because they felt they were going to be in trouble if they responded in some positive way to stop that violent act. And the it's actually not a gun bill. It is simply a self-defense bill. As I said on the House floor when it first passed, I don't care if you use a chair leg. You should feel empowered that we're going to stand beside you legally if you are doing something to stop a violent attack, and that you can meet force with force, including deadly force if necessary. And it's under a reasonable man standard that anyone who heard this story, got all the facts, would understand that it was reasonable for you to assume you were under violent attack. And you can't be doing anything illegal. It's not there to protect drug dealers or anybody that wants to have gang wars and fights and or even really domestic violence issues. It's strictly for a law-abiding citizen who's doing nothing wrong, who's in their home, in their vehicle, or anywhere they have a right to be, and they simply come under a violent perpetrator attack.
Do you get the sense, though, that in some cases the law has been used in defense of acts that aren't necessarily the way you would have, envisaged it when you crafted the legislation?
I do have some questions about some of the applications. I think there's a process of public policy that you adopt statutes, bills that become statutes of law. Then there is a working out through the application of that through law enforcement, through state attorneys, and through courts to develop how they're going to apply that statute. And obviously our goal is that work out to equal justice before the law, that everyone is treated the same. And that is the difference in a civil society such as ours, that the rule of law is the same. What we find is we're a nation of human beings, and individuals may or may not interpret or utilize those statutes properly in the same way. I think there has been some tremendous growth out of this discussion in the ability of law enforcement to better understand what the law is and is not, and how procedurally they're going to work out their application. Also, in the court system, I think there's been evolving process there of how do we hear this issue, how do we deal with this issue in the court setting procedurally. So those things are in flux, and I think at a third level is just the whole issue of pulling back the fur on a very painful issue, and that is, are we still having trouble in our society treating everyone equally? And those ramifications as a society are still with us.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading something from March last year and quoted as saying that you didn't think the law was really relevant to the George Zimmerman case. I mean, do you still stand by that view?
I think anybody is getting on very thin ice as they move away from the situation where you are simply going about your life and you come under a violent attack. And as more and more of that case unfolded and unwrapped, there was a lot more to that story, and that had to be considered. So I think anyone who is going to try to reach for that law, and I think that any time you're doing this kind of decision-making, you're going to have calls that are very close to the foul line, no matter where you put that foul line. Is it in or is it out?
Mm-hmm.
And the decision-making process can be quite a quandary sometimes, and I look at some of the rulings that have occurred, and I sense that from reading these cases that many times the judge is more focused on that moment at which, you know, there may be another self-defense to be made. You know, it was my life or his. You know, that's where I was. Now, how you came to that, I think, makes a big difference of whether it's this law applying or not.
Mm-hmm. One study, I read a report on, a 2012 study actually by Texas A&M University. In that study, researchers said they found in 20 states with stand your ground laws or similar kinds of self-defense laws, the homicide rate increased by 8%, And I just want to come back to that idea. I mean, do you think there's a correlation between these kinds of laws and that statistic, or would you have to look at other factors as well?
Well, I'm not familiar with the study, but generally across the country, we've seen a decline in those cases of violent crime. The factor that does get raised that I think bears some scrutiny is the justifiable homicides. And when you focus in on there, sometimes you do see some change in the numbers. It's important to look at that data very carefully and understand that you're looking at a very small subset of numbers. Over half of those justifiable homicides are actually law enforcement doing their job and are not these personal cases that we're talking about of civilians involved with civilians. And they could just well be a measure that this is a reason that we're having reduced crime, because a justifiable homicide is just that. It said that it was justified and it prevented someone else being victimized by homicidal crime.
Representative Baxley, I want to thank you for coming in and speaking to us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. We're talking about Stand Your Ground. I'm Matthew Petty. Do you think Stand Your Ground is a good law? Do you think it goes too far? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at intersection@wmfe.org. I'm joined on the line now by Florida Senate Minority Leader Chris Smith. Senator Smith is a Democrat from Fort Lauderdale. He appointed his own task force to review Stand Your Ground. He'll push legislation this session incorporating some of his task force findings. Senator Smith, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I want to ask you, Senator, first of all, what were some of your task force's findings?
Well, our findings were that the Stand Your Ground law was being misused in a lot of instances from what the general public would believe. Whereas the general public believes Stand Your Ground, meaning if I'm accosted by someone, I can defend myself and even shoot them, I won't have to retreat. Because my task force had, you know, a diverse group of people, we got testimony that it's being used in drug cases. In suppression drug cases, it's being used in schools with fights in school. It's been used in a myriad of areas because of the notoriety of the law. Defense attorneys have started using it in a plethora of cases to suppress evidence and things like that.
So, I mean, why did you feel compelled to appoint your own task force and Stand Your Ground? Because obviously, you know, the Lieutenant Governor's task force was touring through the state. They were talking to people, not just regular citizens, but also experts in the field as well. Why did you feel there was the need for an extra level of scrutiny on this law?
Well, I did my task force first. After the incident in Sanford and Stand Your Ground got notoriety, because it wasn't used a lot. It wasn't a statute that a lot of people use, but once they heard about it, and actually criminal defense attorneys started hearing about this great, you know, get out of jail free card, they started using it more, and I called on the governor to appoint a task force, and the governor had stated that he would wait until the whole Sanford and Trayvon Martin incident, everything, all investigations are over, and I called on him saying that it's beyond Trayvon Martin, it's beyond Sanford, we need to at least look at this thing now. And so he never gave a time that he would appoint a task force. So at that time, I appointed my own with professionals, you know, that I could get together in a short amount of time with, you know, basically no money. It was local people who have dealt with it who could, you know, serve on their own dime.
So you're saying that after the Trayvon Martin shooting, there were more lawyers in Florida using this law as a justification?
Oh, yes. I mean, if you talk to judges around Florida, they'll tell you some judges hadn't really had a Stand Your Ground motion, and now they're saying every week they're getting Stand Your Ground motions. Here's a case in point. If someone's out and they get into a fight and they discharge their gun, or, you know, they stand their ground, doesn't have to be gun, they stand their ground in a fight, and police, upon arresting them, they search their car where they're at, and they find drugs. Well, what defense attorneys are saying is, my client was standing his ground while doing this fight, while doing this action. He was under the Stand Your Ground statute. And because Stand Your Ground says in the law, police cannot arrest, and under the definition of arrest is detain. So police can't even detain anyone. So therefore, police were violating the law when they detained him. Therefore, the search was illegal, and the drug charges get thrown out. Okay. Now, when the legislature passed Stand Your Ground, and when the general public thought about Stand Your Ground, they never conceived that lawyers would be as creative to use this statute in simple drug cases.
Senator Smith, we've looked at some surveys, and they show about half of Americans support Stand Your Ground legislation or laws like it. And one poll showed that 65% of Floridians feel the law doesn't need to be changed. Do you think the law should be changed?
Oh, definitely. And actually, I got poll results that has it as high as 75%. Don't think it should be changed. But, I hate to do the old politician two-step of once people understand what it is, then they'll see that changes are needed. The vast majority of the public, that 75%, do not understand that this is one place in the law where we say law enforcement, even while doing your investigation, you cannot detain someone. You can't set someone in the back of your police car while you look at surveillance film. You can't set them in the back of the police car, keep them around while you look at physical evidence. You can't set them in the back of the police car and detain them while you canvass and look for witnesses. We say that in the law, that you cannot even detain. So once normal citizens hear that, oh, my God, they can't even do that, then the number shifts, saying, well, yeah, that is a slight change. I still want my right to defend myself, but I don't want someone saying, I was standing my ground, leave, and then skip town, and we find out, 15 witnesses say, no, the guy was running away and shot in the back or something.
I mean, do you have a specific bill that you're introducing this session to try
to change
that?
Yeah, I have Senate Bill 136, which does a couple of things. One, it takes away detain from the statute. It takes away the word detain. Two, if you're an aggressor, it just says you can't even invoke Stand Your Ground. What you have to do is go under a standard of self-defense, which is a higher standard if you're seen to be the aggressor in this case. And lastly, it calls upon FDLE to keep statistics on use of Stand Your Ground as a defense. Right now, we can only go by, say, what the same, I think the St. Pete Times did a story on it, which they tracked 200 cases, but there's no definitive, this is how many times this has been invoked, these are the type of cases. I think FDLE need to keep those stats, and so maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, when we look at it, we say, okay, it's being misused in drug cases, it's being used in schoolyard fights, we need to do something and adjust. I mean, every law, and I'm not saying that this law should be abolished, even though I had a lot of people saying that, but no law is perfect, and as society changes, we need to go back and look at what we did and say, okay, it's being misused this way. Let's adjust it in this way. Let's adjust it this way.
I mean, are you optimistic that there will be some change at some point?
No. I'm going to try, and I'm trying every day, and I'm trying to get the discussion going. But it's very tough. I mean, the makeup of the legislature right now is very conservative, and the makeup is a lot of people who are really on the, get their directions from the NRA, which is no to everything. So it's going to be very tough.
I've been speaking with State Senate Minority Leader Chris Smith. Senator Smith, very nice speaking with you. The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green and Brendan Byrne are assistant producers. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.